welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesvedel, and I'm your host. On today's program, part one of the big year-end wrap-up. It's been a big damn year in media policy, media regulation, and also on our radio dials. As usual, to join me now, I think probably for the fifth time doing one of these things, John Anderson of DIYmedia.net. You do want to stay tuned. All right, Ensign, welcome aboard the good ship Media Geek once again. Yeah. And I do believe it's been five times.
Really? This is the fifth consecutive year we've done a year-end review?
I think we've done it ever since I started the program.
Doesn't that make it some sort of metallic anniversary year?
No, I don't think you start getting medals until 10.
No, okay.
I think now it's wood? Fifth is probably like paper
wood.
Or
okay. Great, like well, that. Happy anniversary, Paul.
Oh, wow, thank you, and to you as well. We've got a lot. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. This has been quite a year, and of course, we're sitting here on. We're recording. We're going to tape here on the 14th. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Of this fine month of December, and coming up on the 18th is a big FCC meeting. So
yeah.
It'll have already happened for some of you listening, either on the podcast or listening on some of our affiliate stations. But for others of you, you're just waiting for it now.
Yes. It will be, or for those of you listening afterwards, it was quite a hoedown. This promises to be one of the most contentious FCC meetings in modern history. What has happened with Kevin Martin's governorship of the FCC over the last 3 months, even, has just turned him into Mikey Powell squared.
Yeah, he's pulled a Powell.
He has completely made Michael Powell look like a very a puppy dog.
Yeah.
With the way that he has come out and exposed the way that he's run this agency.
Strong arming,
underhanded maneuvers, keeping staff away from talking to other commissioners, leaking information on rulemakings to industry lobbyists before public interest advocates. Oh, by the way, his chief of staff was just accused in a lawsuit of being part of a Ponzi scheme involving a fake oil exploration company chartered in Seattle, Washington, to the tune of $54 million. Kevin Martin didn't know this guy, Gonzalez is his name, was involved in this whole deal. Moonlighting as a corporate director for a potentially fraudulent oil exploration company doing quote-unquote work in Indonesia.
Well, you know.
And Kevin Martin doesn't even know the chief of staff is doing this kind of... I mean, you have to wonder who's
really
running
sign those forms.
The ship over there.
The conflict of interest forms, he doesn't really sign those.
It's unbelievable. I mean, really, when Details Magazine took that infamous picture of Kevin Martin standing on a bed in a hotel room with two lobbyists off to the side, it really has become personified.
It's interesting.
And it actually just kind of hit a crescendo yesterday. That would be Thursday the 13th.
Yeah.
When the Senate Commerce Committee held a hearing in which all five FCC commissioners had to show up. And they just got their behinds handed to them. Bipartisan style. Oh, it was on C-SPAN. I watched it on replay. It was pretty unbelievable. It was an hour and a half, 2 hour long hearing of senators just railing on Kevin Martin. And when it was over, Kevin Martin scurries right off to the chairman, Daniel Inouye, right off to his chair, because C-SPAN keeps the picture on after the meeting's over. The other two Republicans, McDowell and Tate, quietly pack up their things, and Adelstein and Copps turn to each other with big, cheesy smiles on their faces, so happy that Congress is just breathing down the neck of Kevin Martin right now.
Right. And Adelstein and Copps are the two Democrats on the FCC.
And repeatedly at this hearing, senators, bald-facedly and across the aisle, asked Kevin Martin, would he delay his contentious vote on media ownership coming up at the December 18th meeting? And he said explicitly, no, he would not. Which doesn't really mean anything, because the FCC has now gotten into this habit of delaying its meetings by 12 hours as there's some backdoor haggling over what stays on the agenda or not.
So this one probably won't go off on time either.
No, this one is going, and when it does, and if this goes through on a party line 3-2 vote, this contentious vote on the cross ownership, getting rid of the cross ownership band effectively, when this goes through, the statements that are going to be read, Kevin Martin's especially, and then the two Democrats are going to be heated.
That's
going to
be the fun stuff. Yeah. Well, I'll make sure to get that recorded.
Yes, yeah, you're going to want to play clips from
week.
That.
It's amazing, though. You're right, but on the one hand, so you know, we have the rushing, pushing the decision on the cross ownership ban, with barely any opportunity for public input on that specific. On that specific item, and really giving no opportunity to his fellow commissioners to read any of the public comment.
He formally published his proposal in the New York Times,
right?
In an op-ed. That's when everybody, including the other commissioners of the FCC, got to read it. That was he published it a week before public comment was closed on the media ownership proceeding.
And last month, he managed to tick off the two Republicans because of his attempt to strong arm the cable decision.
Oh, yeah, to increase regulation over cable systems.
So he's busy. 70-70 rule. He's equal opportunity offending there.
Yeah, this is really going to be something. And, Tate and McDowell, the two other Republican sock puppets, really, because they have not... With the exception of McDowell once on the AT&T Bell South merger, showed any backbone or any individual initiative or knowledge of the issues on their own. If they come down on a party line vote, it'll be really interesting to see how they justify it, because McDowell, especially when he has deigned to come out to these public hearings that have been held around the country, is very impressed by the size of the crowd.
Yeah.
So he obviously has a little bit of independent thought in his head. I could see this being one of these things where it's 3-2, but McDowell approves in part and dissents in part because they can split their votes like that. I don't know. It's... The FCC has been fun. It's really turned into a circus. And, it's nice to see things like Congress getting involved and threatening to do dastardly deeds to the FCC. One of the most important things, I think, that came out of the Senate Commerce Committee hearing was that Inouye basically said that one of his top pieces of work that he wants to do in the next congressional session is actually look at possibly overhauling the oversight of the FCC, which would include changing the terms of the commissioners, which could be very interesting. Kevin Martin, he was a smooth operator until he just hit one patch of black ice somehow, and everything is just coming down around his ears.
The minority party commissioners can't really do much. He sort of counts on that. So if he's slipping things past them, slipping things behind their back, getting things through, he can kind of get away with it. But when you do it to the other commissioners, which apparently he's done with the Republicans as well, he really starts to erode his base. And then on top of that, when you're pleasing one set of lobbyists but not pleasing another, you're going to create conflicts, and someone's going to cry foul in that whole arena. Whether it's the cable lobby versus the telecom lobby versus the newspaper lobby, Tribune, etc. You start pitting these guys against each other, feeling like somebody they didn't get a fair shaking at all. And it's kind of like Christians to the Lions at that point.
Yeah, and I just can't fully explain how Kevin Martin has let things go so badly. I mean, this is something that he's taken the whole idea of chairman's prerogative to a new level. There's always been an extra added authority that the chairman has to do things like determine what's on the agenda. But the way that Kevin Martin has manipulated staff...
He drank his own Kool-Aid.
Used staff to basically hoodwink other commissioners, not allowing them to talk to commissioners on certain issues. I mean, that just goes above and beyond anything that anybody, including Mikey Powell, ever tried to
do. It's as if he'd has been strategizing with Karl Rove.
This is Rovian tactics, and it's a... It'll be interesting to see what happens.
But I think he's been drinking his own Kool-Aid, because he was definitely a media darling. Up until earlier this year, getting mostly fawning press reviews and fawning reviews from even Democrats in Congress for being such a smooth operator and seeming so conciliatory and so much less extreme than Michael Powell, who at least lets you know where he stood on things. No guessing where Mikey Powell was at. I don't think he had a sneaky bone in his body.
Right.
And again, that hurt him, but at the same time, you always knew where he stood.
Yeah, but even with Kevin Martin, though, I mean, where Mikey Powell was a lot more of a bodacious talker, Kevin Martin is the one who's really walking the walk. Everything that he does is completely tied into a neoliberal policy agenda. It's basically he's a water boy for neoliberalism played out within communications policy. Everything that he answered as far as the FCC was concerned at this Commerce Committee hearing pretty much came down to the mantra of the marketplace knows best.
Right.
I mean, it's not like he has a sophisticated regulatory philosophy.
No.
It's not like he is taking the FCC in a different direction from Michael Powell. For a while, it just seemed like the fair-haired boy. And I swear, this guy looks like Doogie Howser. He doesn't look old enough to drink.
Yeah.
Running this thing, you know, the darling boy image has just fallen apart with the things that he's actually been pulling, with the way that he's been pulling the strings at the agency. It's unbelievable. So that meeting will be or has been contentious.
Well, and especially since he is for most likely a lame duck in this role.
Yeah.
And that's assuming that we get a Democrat president coming in.
And if we do, we'll be reporting about Chairman Copps.
Yeah, that's the most likely scenario there. He certainly earned his stripes on that one.
Yeah.
Which is by and large a good thing, except maybe on a couple of issues like indecency and such. But, it seems to me that with the level of faux pas he's engaging in, I don't even see that if we end up with a President Giuliani or President Huckabee that we are going to be seeing a continued chairmanship of Martin.
Ah, yes.
I don't think he's going to survive that at this point.
But, there's a real easy way that these folks move on. They either go into the telecom investment industry or they become honorary professors somewhere.
I'm not crying for him.
That's basically the two places where he's going to end up.
And he's going to go do both. He'll get the professorship and sit on a bunch of boards to the tune of a few million dollars a year. No, I'm not worried about him, but it seems to me it's interesting how he's really overplaying his hand, even as he's basically a lame duck. And basically it looks like he's pushing this item on the ending the cross-ownership ban for all intents and purposes because he knows he's a lame duck and he's got very few opportunities left to put it through.
Yes.
And he's doing
this is a Hail Mary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally a Hail Mary. It's very interesting. You are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. We are deep into the critical examination part on today's show.
Yes.
I'm Paul Rizzo, and I'm your host. With me is John Anderson from DIYmedia.net. He is also a doctoral student at the Institute of Communications Research here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He looks deep inside of media policy and is a special expert on radio and digital radio, and he comes on to speak about that quite frequently. And his great website is DIYmedia.net, where he keeps up with all sorts of media policy-related things.
Which I'm updating.
Pirate radio.
I'm updating.
He's
now
busy updating. It's been a rough semester teaching and doing preliminary exams and such, but it's getting updated. And, of course, you can go there to find truthful translation. Politicians and other celebrities somehow manipulated to actually tell the truth through the aid of software.
500
truthful translations. You want to go there. That's the secret hidden bounty of the site. Lots and lots of MP3 goodness. You can you can get your mashup dose hit for many, many weeks by going to DIYmedia.net. And, of course, you can check out the Media Geek website at MediaGeek.net, and you get this program at radio.mediageek.net. And so the interesting about Martin, though, so we get this weird thing happening in that a bit of a wet kiss to low power FM.
Yes.
through all of this going on, we get one attempting to regulate cable, which isn't so much of a wet kiss to the media reform community, but it's better than nothing.
Right.
But then this enormous wet kiss to low power FM of making efforts to protect the existing stations. And then the big move to limit the translator stations, the non-commercial stations that can only rebroadcast other stations, even thousands of miles away, on a low-power status, that are taking up slots that could be filled by low-power stations.
It was very interesting to see the FCC conflate those issues into this latest reporting order. The fact that the two issues were actually consolidated and addressed in the same document really very pleasantly surprised me.
Yes.
Because up until now, the FCC has been looking at low-power FM and translators as two kind of separate entities, when by technical specifications they are completely identical. The problem is translators, for a lot of different reasons, have primacy in effect over low power FM stations. And now the FCC is beginning to reverse itself on that notion, to make LPFM stations possibly slightly primary to translators, at least under certain considerations, and even put them on a certain level of parity with full power FM
and
stations.
That's a big move,
which has really made the broadcast industry angry.
Yeah, NAB is real ticked about that.
But they can't really say a lot about this because they are also going for their own FM translator grab right now. They have a proposed rulemaking in front of the FCC whereby they want to give all the AM stations in America, their initial suggestion is at least 5 FM translators apiece to compensate for the loss of coverage that they get because of digital radio.
Something which they lobbied for
right.
in the first place.
You know, it's a huge mess. So they really can't go after LPFM, which has given the FCC, I think, an opportunity to release such a at least robust sounding idea. Now, in effect, what the FCC has done is not changing anything. It will not involve any sort of literal expansion
right.
of low-power FM radio stations.
Because the FCC can't do that.
For example, on the translator issue, they looked. They actually went back and examined the 2003 Great Translator Invasion, where all these religious broadcasters filed for tens of thousands of translators. And they decided they're going to limit the number of pending applicants that haven't been approved for by the FCC to 10.
Do you know how many?
More than half of the applicants have already been processed.
And so a lot of those are gone.
The horse is already out the barn.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And back when the FCC was petitioned by a bunch of people to actually look at what was happening with speculation involving the translators from 2003, which we've talked about in detail on prior episodes, which you can find at radio.mediageek.net, they said in a prior rulemaking that they were going to stop the processing of these applications anyway, and they continued. Mm-hmm. So they weren't even enforcing their own rule on this issue. Now they've come out and reiterated it and in a certain way by saying we're only going to process the next 10 from all of these people. But whether or not that actually happens, I think their feet's going to need to be held to the fire. And then they also have to completely get rid of the NAB's idea to get more FM translators on the dial for AM stations. And then possibly you can look at the rulemaking as being something positive. For example, the FCC made a commitment that the next time they open a filing window for FM radio stations, it'll be for LPFM stations. Now, will those be for more 100-watt stations, or will they be for the critical 10-watt stations, which can actually be fit in areas where 100-watt stations can't go? There was an explicit note in the FCC's report and order saying that Congress should repeal the third adjacent channel restrictions, which is interesting because the FCC is formally prohibited from lobbying Congress on these issues, but they actually wrote it in writing that someone should do that. So they're at least oriented toward the idea of expanding low power FM, but nothing in the order itself guarantees an expansion.
Right. So do you think maybe one reason that, say, Kevin Martin and the Republican majority would want to let this go forward would be it's sort of we do this so that when we grant the translators to the commercial AMs, you know, we've sort of done a little bit of parody. They can feel like, well, you know, since we did this giveaway, we've done our little giveaway to the nonprofit, to the public interest community.
Yeah, I don't know. I really hope not. I hope that the FCC sure. is not conflating those two issues. And frankly, that's not something I really have given much thought to.
It was very unusual to see them, move towards giving low power FM stations some priority over translator stations, and also over the expansion of power and signal area of commercial stations or full power stations at which to expand.
Well, to get even more wonkish on you for a second, there is a slight sunny side to the NAB's proposal.
Yeah.
To allow AM stations to have FM translators. As part of this, some AM stations, of course, can't broadcast at night, right? But if they had FM translators, those could broadcast 24 hours a day. So this proposal, in part, seeks to allow AM broadcasters to originate programming on FM translators. Now, if the firewall between originating programming on translator stations is eroded, what is the fundamental difference between a 250-watt LPFM station and a 100-watt LPFM station, except for one of them is commercial and the other is non-commercial?
Right. Now, whether or not you could actually take such a paradox and turn it into policy that would serve the public interest.
Hey, it'd be on the record, and at least you could put it out there and say, look at your rules. They don't make any sense.
And take them to court.
Right.
And that's really where you can see those things sorted out.
That's possibly one positive outcome out of this.
That's a pretty thin silver lining.
I would rather see the FCC just say that the translator right. issue is a stupid idea, continue to actually implement the restrictions they've promised to in this LPFM rulemaking, and see what happens really on the front of expansion, especially when this next filing window is going to be opened.
Mm-hmm. I'm still
that would be a great stop for the 2008 elections. Hint, hint.
What would be?
Opening an LPFM filing window in 2008.
That's right.
That would be, you know, a nice, desperate, last-minute maneuver to say that you're operating in the public interest.
So we still have some legislation kicking around Congress to possibly, once again, another attempt to repeal the 2000 restrictions on low-power FM.
Yes.
It's gotten out of committee in the Senate. I don't know what its status in the House is.
It's sitting in committee, and folks that are actually working on this bill say that they hope to have it reported out possibly for a floor vote by early next year.
Do you think it's likely it could get signed, even if it passes the Senate and the House? If it doesn't get signed, I don't think they have the votes to get a... override a veto.
I don't think there are votes there to override a veto, and we still don't actually know if the votes are there for passage. I mean, there are a significant, I think 70-something number of co-sponsors in the House on this Local Community Radio Act, is the name of the bill. Who knows? You know, I mean, it really is a question of odds and probabilities and Bush's status or feelings of charity as a lame duck president. I mean, you know, compared to the size and scope of the contentious issues that the Bush administration itself has been involved in, with things like torture and warrantless wiretapping,
it's kind of small peanuts.
Signing a low power FM radio expansion bill, you know, is nothing. I mean, it could conceivably happen.
Yeah.
You know, it could get slipped underneath Bush's radar, and he might sign it in a big pile of stuff he signs every day. You know, I really don't know.
It might have a better chance again with the 2000 if we have a Democratic president.
And then at that point, the FCC would still have to implement it. And with a lame duck FCC, I doubt that they would actually undertake the writing of the rules that would need to be done, and then the formal process of starting to implement it and expanding it, et cetera, et cetera.
That would be another few years.
That would be into the 2008 or 2009, 2010.
Things, they do move slow. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, it is good to see a Congress more responsive to the public interest with regard to media policy. But yet one has to put on your reality goggles to watch as while the bills get floated, like a bill was floated to stop the FCC from being able to make this decision coming up on December 18th.
Right.
But they can't possibly get pushed through quickly enough in the current environment to do any good.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
they can threaten, but that's it.
The amount of legislation that has been put forward, at least, you know, technically introduced by the Democrats in Congress has been somewhat impressive.
Yeah.
Bills promoting network neutrality, bills that would stop the media consolidation effort, bills that would promote low power FM radio, various things like that are wonderful. But if you actually look at the record of success, the only substantive piece of media reform legislation that has come out of the first session of this Congress has been a bill to mandate that the FCC collect better data on broadband penetration, which in itself is an incremental step forward towards change in the nation's broadband policy to make broadband more ubiquitous, which we all want, right? Because broadband is good for everyone, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the only substantive thing that this Congress has done so far.
Mm-hmm.
Has passed a bill to tell the FCC to collect more data so they can think about this issue more.
Well, a Democratic majority, A, is not enough.
Right.
You really need more than a simple majority. And B, just being a Democrat does not make you necessarily quite on board with the entire
public interest
plan, because depending on where you're from and who your constituents are, you may indeed owe a lot more to the broadcast industry or to the copyright cartel, to the large media producers, the recording industry, etc.
Yeah, the fun is really in the committees. I mean, the fun is where the noise is, where the noise can be made, and where pseudo effects can look really important. Mm-hmm. And that's in committees, when committee votes are taken and committee hearings take place, where there's actual fireworks and things like that. That's where the fun is right now.
Mm-hmm.
It would be more fun if it actually moved to the House and Senate floor on a lot of these issues, but... dang, with an election year coming up and everything, I really don't know. You know, I would like to think that media could consider, you know, could, I think, will be conceivably an issue in the 2008 elections. It's already started to set itself up that way on certain aspects in the presidential race.
Yeah.
Where the, you know, candidates have taken formal stances on things like network neutrality and media ownership. Whether that translates into, you know, what happens in everybody's congressional district is another story.
Yeah, especially in the House.
Yeah.
It's a crapshoot.
And you know, I think that's one of the reasons why Free Press has, you know, not to give them a wholehearted plug here, but I mean, and quasi-unintentional plug, that's why they're holding their next media reform conference in June of 2008, I think, is to get people oriented on media as being a political issue and possibly mobilizing some folks in those last few months to start hitting candidates on this issue and getting people to vote for media reform.
Do you think we'll see...
Like, we've seen it before with other activist organizations making people vote on single issues. Vote for gun rights, vote for abortion. If you can convince a large enough constituency to vote for Democratic media, then, you know, be my guest.
You know, the since they're holding the conference up in Minneapolis, I wonder if we'll see an appearance from possible senatorial candidate Franken.
Oh, gosh.
From the great state of Minnesota.
Yeah, who knows? there's got to be better things at the conference than that.
Oh, but he's got the star
Let's
power.
Let's lobby to have Atmosphere play at the headline show. Yeah. That would be wonderful.
Not an issue to get Prince.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Prince should definitely at least
be on
a
panel. I mean,
you
know, he's always had such a bad relationship with the major label, especially Warner Brothers. You know, he should be on the panel. That would be for a good conference, but I agree. But and it is good to see, the stature that this telecommunications media policy has in the political debate altogether is much higher than 10, 12 years ago.
Right.
Things are not getting slipped by nearly as well. A Telecom Act of 1996 probably could not happen and go down the same way now.
No.
And that is a good situation, but it's just that's only just the beginning of the battle.
What we still need to see is the whole idea of a paradigm towards thinking of things like a Telecom Act of 1996. Like I said, there's been a lot of interesting legislation put forward, but I don't think that these people are actually looking at them as part of a larger telecommunications media regulation universal issue. Now, if we got people looking at the Telecommunications Reform Act of 2008 or 2010 or 2012.
Well, there was the big talk of the Telecommunications Act of 2007.
That actually might roll back.
Yeah.
Because the effort to actually extend upon the Telecom Act of 1996 forwarded by Ted Stevens fell apart miserably.
Yes. The tubes are clogged.
Yeah. The next Telecom Act could actually be... putting telecom policy towards a more restrictive, proactive regulatory model, that would be a wonderful accomplishment, but we're not quite there yet.
Not quite, but closer than we have been in quite some time.
Yes, so I guess we should be happy about that.
All right, John, we're about done. It's time to go get some beer.
Great.
Sorry, y'all. Y'all can open up beers at home.
That's right. You need a sound effect of a bottle popping off a beer.
While you listen to the podcast, you're listening at home, or maybe go out to the bar, however it goes. Thanks once again. We'll be catching up with what happens on the 18th next week, and we'll also get to what's going on with the unlicensed folks as you're catching up with your database this week.
Yes.
Semester's over, so John can now do what everyone does when the semester's over, pile through the enforcement actions at the FCC.
That's right.
It's going to be a party over John's place next
week. I love Dreamweaver.
DIYmedia.net is where you can find John's website. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Montana. Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND, Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD, Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.